Dudes. Welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Craig Maugher, and our special guest this week, former Speaker of the House, Jace Bolger. Thanks for coming to MERS World Headquarters today.
Well, it's great to be at MERS World Headquarters, and I can't believe this is the first time, really, what I'm disappointed in. This is your first invite.
Maybe the first of more to come. How about that?
I've seen the regional office, or I guess probably more accurately, the mobile office on two wheels riding around town. Caught you there, but never here, so it's good to be here.
The mobile office. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever typed anything on the mobile office. Maybe in a lawn chair outside your office a time or two.
It certainly is agile. It would stop on a dime and grab a tape recorder in somebody's face.
I've gotten pretty apt at that, I can tell you.
When you're not hiding in the hallway.
Yes.
Well, you're out riding on the bike.
I haven't had to hide in the hallway all that much yet because we've only had a few behind-the-scenes meetings where I've known where everybody is and ready to pounce as soon as folks come out of the door.
Well, they must be keeping that a little quieter than that was handled before.
Yeah, or maybe I don't feel like we're going to get like a deal on roads as I did maybe during the December of 2014. Right. Things are moving a little slowly, and I guess that's why I wanted to have you in here. You've got to empathize a little bit here with Kevin Cotter. We've had a Senate plan that just came over $700 to $800 million in new revenues, a part of it, and the Republican caucus in the House is...
Well, it is difficult. Certainly what I saw from Rhodes was that there was a plethora of proposals, but there's a shortage of solutions. And that it takes 56, 20, and 1. And while that's elementary to those in town, everybody has their own idea. But they need to have an idea that can get the support of 56, 20, and 1. Or I guess we need to say 55, maybe 19 plus a lieutenant governor and one. But the point being that they have to drive to a solution, and that's not easy to get to. The other dynamic that's at play is that this is a long-term problem. This is a problem that's more than a decade old, but for many of these first-term legislators, it's a problem they've only been dealing with for 6 months. So they've got to work through various options in their own right and make sure that they reconcile that they're coming up with the best solution.
Now, would you say it's fair to say that there's a segment of the House Republican caucus that's okay with revenue, and then there's another side that is not okay with additional revenue, and neither of them equal 56 votes by themselves?
Well, I think the difficulty, the push-pull you're identifying, is that there are people who are determined to solve the problem, and my sense is House leadership is part of that group that is determined to find a solution. But there is hesitation to raise new revenue. It's difficult to make the associated cuts. I think there's a phase in, and I think there's a wide open opportunity here. What didn't get covered much, although if you go back and look at the comments at the end of 2014, is there was talk of a compromise somewhere in between. Let's start with, you can get $1.25 billion for roads, but that is a different question than how much new revenue you raise. You can dedicate existing resources. In the first 4 years of Snyder, we dedicated $400 million in general fund to roads. You can make that ongoing. Those who say a general fund dedication means that it's subject to the appropriation every year are misleading you, and I argue that if they should know better, they're misleading you on purpose.
You would have to okay that on an annual basis.
No, though. You can dedicate the revenue stream so that it's not an annual... Yes.
But future lawmakers come around and just change that.
But they can change the law.
Isn't that the case with any solution? Isn't that the case for, couldn't you say, if that's your argument, couldn't you say, so if they raised the gas tax, they could then cut the gas tax? It's not permanent. Mm-hmm. Well, based on that standard, that's where I say people are misleading if they say a dedication of general fund is not ongoing, it's not long-term, that's hogwash. It is. So the argument is, how much new revenue versus how much dedication of existing takes place to get you to at least $1.25 billion? And in December of 2014, there were a lot of conversations. I was repeatedly willing to compromise myself in between there. But you saw the Democrats, you saw others who said, listen, it's got to all be new revenue. And they went further. They said, not only has it got to be all new revenue, it's got to be more things. So I think that was a giant mistake, at least an 80% mistake, if you will, based on the vote result. And so I hope there were some lessons learned there and a compromise can be achieved between the House and the Senate where they're at right now.
That sounds really easy. Why can't lawmakers just meet and say, all right, the Senate's here, the House is here, we'll meet in the middle on the gas tax increase and do the same amount of cuts that both plans had, and just there's a solution right there.
Because you get people, I mean, compromise is difficult, is the bottom line. It sounds easy. It's easy to say. It's difficult to achieve. And we did it repeatedly on a lot of different things. Detroit, solving the original budget deficit of $1.5 billion. Tax reform. There were a lot of different compromises that we were able to achieve. This one, we weren't able to achieve between the parameters that we're talking about here in December of 2014, but that opportunity exists. But people have to reconcile that their own plan doesn't have the support that it would take. I mean, you've heard people still saying they should put up a vote for $1.25 billion in new revenue. It wouldn't have passed in 2014. It's not going to pass now. So get about compromising instead of trying to force your own way.
If you did meet in the middle, that just wouldn't have the votes. Is that what you're saying? Or
no, I think meeting in the middle could have the votes. I think it could have had the votes in 2014, but we couldn't reach that agreement. The Democrats were convinced that you had to raise the entire amount via new revenue. And that's where we were apart. That's where they wouldn't compromise. They kept saying, put the vote up, put the vote up. Well, I knew the votes weren't there. Grimal said that we got to forge a compromise, but the compromise wasn't achieved until you talked about Proposal 1.
Well, let's talk about 2014 a little bit. We had Gretchen Whitmer on the show last week, and she suggested that you beat Governor Snyder in the negotiations on the road issue. Here, we'll play that clip right here. So Proposal 1 was all about Jace Bulger, then, is what you're saying? You just had to do what he needed to do at the time?
Jace Bulger beat Governor Snyder on that, and that's why we ended up with Proposal 1, absolutely.
So respond to that. Do you feel like you beat Governor Snyder?
Oh boy, I heard bitter. And what I heard was the continued stubbornness. That's not the compromise that you're talking about, Craig. I heard just put it up. I heard her repeatedly saying that they had to, it's our way. Now, if I were operating that way, I'd say go with the Bulger plan. Put up the Bulger plan in the Senate, because the Bulger plan would have passed in the Senate. Instead, you go back to my comments at those time, and I was seeking that compromise to get to $1.25 billion ongoing for roads. The compromise is how much comes from existing and how much comes from new revenue.
Did you really think that Proposal 1 would pass?
I thought if you could achieve it, it was the right policy because it gave the best long-term options for the state and for lawmakers to try to make sure that they continue to drive Michigan forward. I knew it would be difficult. I knew anything would be difficult. But I also found it fascinating that we had a flood of people who would come into the office, and the Democrats would say people support raising revenue for roads. And yet, as soon as it was passed, they said, well, wait a minute, what if people don't vote to support this? And I thought, well, were you lying to me before, or are you misleading now? But I think the ultimate lesson, and it flied in direct contrast with what the Democrats were saying, were people wanted the roads fixed, but they didn't want other things brought in. They bulked it up with too many other demands. And boy, I hope they've learned their lesson, but they don't seem to show that propensity. They seem to repeat their same mistakes.
So a cynical person could say, well, you pushed for a ballot proposal here because you wanted to see the option of all new revenue fail in a remarkable fashion, with the voters saying, no, we don't need all new revenue for roads.
It's Kyle Lynn's not a cynical person, is he?
I'm in journalism, ain't I?
You go back to that time and you will find many comments from me publicly saying, meet me between 0 and $1.25 billion. It didn't have to go to this in order to find that compromise from my perspective. So cynically, it wasn't me that was pushing that. However, that's where it ended up because people refused to compromise in between. That's where the opportunity exists today. And boy, it's my hope as a Michigan citizen that that's what they achieved today. I'll tell you, I think the Senate introduced something that makes it even better, and that is the income tax phase out. I think that is truly transformative in containing the size of government as well as making Michigan more competitive.
One of the things that I've heard from some Democrats lately louder and louder is, why do the Republicans keep blaming us, criticizing us when they have the majority in the House and the Senate? They have, you know, Rick Snyder in office as governor. They keep begging me, ask this question. Why don't they just do it themselves?
Well, I think the Democrats seem intent on forcing them to do that, and that's fine. However, they also say, come talk to us. They also say, well, we're willing to compromise when they're not demonstrating that they are. I think people need to set that rhetoric aside and talk about solutions, because ultimately that's what the voters want. They want you to deliver. They want elected officials to solve problems. And frankly, I think they're awfully forgiving within the details of how those problems are solved. As an elected official, you should fear not providing a solution more than a solution that you have to compromise to achieve. And so I think people are misplaced in their fear quite often. Again, you go back to the prior 4 years and the dramatic changes that were made in the state of Michigan in the prior 4 years. And over again, I would run into people who would say, listen, I don't agree with what you did there, but at least you were doing something. At least you were trying to right the state. And as you look today with more jobs, a balanced budget, and a far more competitive Michigan, Michigan's workers are getting back to work and their incomes rising. The people understand that, and they're willing to forgive the things that they disagree with.
Now, Jace, you are working right now with the West Michigan Policy Forum on this roads issue right now. So as somebody now who's kind of on the outside, do you get the sense that the Snyder administration is now a little more accepting of the idea of using some existing revenue for roads?
Well, that is the sense, and I think that's the proper solution. The Policy Forum has been outspoken. Matt Hayworth, the vice chair of the Policy Forum, just wrote a column in the Detroit News, and I think there are three key points that he laid out that are spot on, and those are you have to achieve at least $1.25 billion ongoing for transportation funding. That is, it ought to be a mix. They ought to look first at the state budget and dedicate existing resources, and then third, that they fill the remaining gap, and even if that does include new revenue, but make sure that that keeps Michigan competitive as they do that, as well as only the amount necessary to fill that remaining gap, not funding other demands, not funding other wishes. So he also made comments that I thought were spot on about the income tax and about how the income tax really taxes people's work and it makes Michigan uncompetitive. I don't think it's a coincidence that the state with the highest growth rate has no income tax rate, and the state with the highest personal income growth has no income tax rate, and those are Texas and Florida.
Did you guys ever kick around tying the income tax to roads?
We had conversations, but not like they're doing today, and I'm impressed with what they're doing today. I think that could ultimately solve roads as well as make Michigan more competitive. And you see the flip of that, what the Democrats offered in their plan. Well, I would actually argue it was a stunt, and that was more of the same failed grand home policies. It should be a simple fact that if you want to make Michigan a better place to have a better career, you have to make Michigan a better place to provide a job. And they're going back to the failed policies instead of looking at states that are creating the most jobs and where personal income is rising the fastest.
But you don't give them any credit for putting a plan out, because I know you guys said a lot of times when you were speaker, they're not putting a plan out. They don't have a plan. What's their plan? They gave you a plan.
I didn't see that as much of a plan. It was awfully thin. In fact, one page thin from what I saw.
But shouldn't the private sector be paying their fair share? Shouldn't business pay their fair share as opposed to individuals taking the brunt of any type of revenue increase?
The last time I checked and talked to people, business owners were people too. And as you look, they pay their income tax. They pay their use tax, their sales tax. They pay, as you look at, and Matt Hayworth made this comment in his Detroit News column, that there are a lot of trucks on the road for people who are part of the West Michigan Policy Forum. Diesel parity, they're going to pay for. A gas tax increase, they're going to pay for. But they supported the Senate plan because they knew it would fix the roads. They knew it was fair. It would mean increased costs. So the misnomer that somehow they are not going to pay it's not just a misnomer, it's an attempt to mislead. They will pay more.
How is it that the Senate was able to get 19 votes plus one for a gas tax increase? And why is it so much harder in the House?
I think a couple key reasons. Number one, a supermajority plus one is awfully nice. That gives you a lot of margin. The only thing better in the House than 56 is 63. And so it's a margin. However, it's not as big as a Senate margin. That's one. The second is senators have had a long time to be dealing with this issue. They've had a long time to work through various proposals and understand what can get support and what doesn't. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of House members have only been dealing with this issue firsthand for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. So they've got to make sure that they reconcile that what they come up with is the best possible solution.
I wanted to ask you on kind of a political front here, how important is it for House Republicans to get a plan to the governor and signed before 2016.
I think it's very important that when you're elected to office, you seek to solve problems. And I think that's what people expect of you. I think no is easy, but I don't think people appreciate that by and large. I think, again, I go back to if you're just talking about the politics, were I in office, I would fear no solution more than I would fear a compromise. And that means that includes a compromise that may include additional revenue. That if you listened to the people when they went to the polls, they said they wanted the roads fixed. They said they didn't want other things bundled in. They said they wanted the legislators to look at their own budget. Then they said, you know, maybe we'll be willing to pay a little bit more so long as we know it goes to the roads. If they can achieve all of those things, then the voters will be okay with their solution.
Then, speaking in raw politics term, is it possible that the Democrats realize this and maybe the plan that they put out this week was reflective of their knowledge that the Republicans really got to do something in the House for the roads that's real, that will get signed?
Well, now you're suggesting that the Democrats really don't want to see a problem solved. And that's possible. They seem to be acting that way instead of coming to the table and saying, we'll help you solve between the 0 and 1.2. We'll help meet the gap between the House and the Senate. But it's not sounding like they're wanting to do that. Instead, it sounds like they're reverting back to what begat Proposal 2 that was soundly defeated in an overreach, and then Proposal 1, which was another overreach that was soundly defeated.
Now, Craig, you were at the House Democratic press conference there for the roads. They got a lot of media coverage that day, didn't they?
Well, they did. I think it was really good timing from them for a publicity perspective, I guess, because all the reporters were there looking to do a story on roads, and here come the Dems in with their plan. And it was really kind of the only, you know, news development that was really easy to cover that day, because the Republicans were kind of meeting behind closed doors and the Dems kind of plopped out their plan.
Now, you were able to record it, so let's, for our listeners who may have some interest in listening to how that press conference went, let's go ahead and play that for them.
Today, House Democrats are announcing a plan that will raise nearly $1.2 billion to finally fix our state's roads and bridges. It's critical that we get something done on our roads. That much is obvious, and everybody knows it. It's equally critical that we get it done in a way that does not just keep going back to the same well, demanding working and middle-class families sacrifice again and again and again. Unlike Republican proposals, our proposal will require corporations and not just middle-class families and seniors to contribute to building a state that works for everyone. And significantly, our proposal does not get rid of the Earned Income Tax Credit that has been a lifeline to lifting middle and low-income people out of poverty. Instead, our plan demands that everyone pay their fair share, including the corporations who rely on roads and bridges to conduct business. Corporations have been the beneficiaries of $2 billion in annual tax breaks over the past several years, paid for by $1.6 billion in new and higher taxes on middle-class and working families. It's the largest tax shift in Michigan history. Corporations pay less than they probably ever have. And Republicans have forced everyday families to pay increasingly more while corporations get tax break after tax break. That tax shift is just plain wrong. In fiscal year 2014, Michigan collected over 50 times more in the form of individual income taxes than it did from business income taxes. Let me be clear. It's wrong for Republicans to demand more sacrifice from families that have seen declining wages, benefit cuts, and large tax increases, while corporations have seen tax giveaway after tax giveaway leading to ever higher profits. Corporations use our roads and bridges as much or more than individuals and families, and they shouldn't be given a free ride when it comes to fixing our crumbling infrastructure. And now I'd like to introduce Democratic floor leader Sam Singh, who will go over the details in the plan. Sam?
Thank you very much, Tim. Once again, I'm Sam Singh. I'm the state representative from East Lansing, and it's my privilege and honor to be the floor leader for this caucus. As Tim mentioned, one of the conversations we wanted to have was about tax fairness and how we made sure that everybody paid their fair share. And as we take a look at both the House and the Senate plans, there is such a reliance on general fund money. And what I found was ironic is that they just passed the budget a few weeks ago. Why did they took the $700 million the senators claimed that they can find in general fund and take it out then? Why did they do the same thing on the House side? There was an opportunity for them to show where those cuts are. So we know cuts will be coming if either one of those plans move forward, and we know who's going to pay the price. It's middle-class families. It's higher tuition and higher education institutions that rely on that general fund. It is revenue sharing that our communities have to do public safety that rely on the general fund. And as you take a look at those items moving forward, we know on top of any additional taxes that middle-class families will pay, those cuts that will happen within the general fund to pay for either one of those plans will come at the expense of those middle-class families and those senior citizens. And that's why we propose this plan. The plan, as Tim mentioned, is a $1.2 billion plan. We first wanted to take a look at how we would prioritize and protect our roads using existing funding. We'll walk you through that piece. Second is we wanted to make sure that we raised reforms and taking a look at different types of funding systems through our registration systems and make sure that those were fair and balanced and make sure we generated the right revenue off of those. And then at the end, we wanted to ask the business community, who has seen the significant tax cuts over the last 4 years, to give a little bit of that back, a little bit of that back so we can actually have the investment in our infrastructure across the state. Because we all know that that infrastructure will benefit those businesses. They can then expand the economic drivers of their industries by actually making that level of investment. And so at this same time, what we can do is also protect the balance with our seniors, our middle-class families, and others who have been paying significantly over the last 4 years since the budget changes of 2011. So first, what we do is we take a look at the existing gas sales tax. That is close to the general fund. We will take $100 million of that is dedicated to the general fund resources and dedicate that to the roads plan specifically. We would also recoup $530 million of the $2 billion in tax cuts that companies received over the last 4 years by asking them to do a little bit more under the corporate income tax and raising that from 6% to 9%. We also then will challenge the governor to renegotiate with the mega tax credits using the model that they've used with Ford Motor Company and the additional conversations that they're having, that they would take $200 million a year to make sure that those dollars and resources are dedicated towards the roads versus to those mega tax credits. And then as we take a look at re-regulating the electricity market, there is revenue that is generated from those companies. And as those monies go to the public utilities, we're asking those public utilities to then dedicate those dollars and resources to the roads as well. And that will generate $225 million a year. We'll be asking that the trucking industry pay their fair share as well. And we'll be introducing increases to truck registration fees and other loopholes that will generate $63 million a year. In total, this overall package will raise the $1.2 billion that many of us have said is at least a starting point in the conversation. And then what it does in the end, though, is it protects our families. It protects those middle-class families, those people that have been giving a lot of their dollars and resources to the state over the last 4 years, and it provides a balanced playing field so everyone is investing in the future of Michigan's economy. This money should be focused so we're not taking money away from schools, from education, from revenue sharing in plans that we see coming out of the Senate and the House Republican plans, and it protects those areas of the budget that took extreme cuts 4 years ago. So we find that this plan is a responsible plan. It generates real money now as we move forward, and I'm pleased to turn over the remainder of the formal presentation to Marilyn Lane, who's been our advocate and the vice chair of the Transportation Committee going forward. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Representative Singh, and hello, this afternoon. My name is Marilyn Lane. I represent District 31. I am Vice Chair on the Transportation Committee. I'm also Vice Chair on our second new committee, so I'm not sure how many committees it takes for transportation to fix our roads, but I am I know you're a great chair on both of them. What you've heard now as far as the plan goes, I think that's what you're going to realize, that this is a genuine plan. This is a plan that I think is really workable. Unlike the other plans that have been out there this far, and I'm not going to continue to talk about the flaws, I think through the media, I think the experts and the governor have done a fine job pointing out all the flaws of the plans we've heard thus far, so I'd like not to reiterate and talk about that any further. I think that when we put forward here, and in hopes of that, we will have our colleagues really take the opportunity to analyze it and look for discussion so that we can be on this point to start working on coming to a comprehensive plan that has long-term solutions in order to fix our roads. I also believe that this is a plan now that evenly puts a fair share on everybody in Michigan, just not Michigan families that are involved in trying to fix the road, that just evenly disperses that fair share on everybody. I think the one question I often don't hear from the media, and I think it's a question important to ask, is in fact, why does the majority, typically whoever the party is, but whoever has a majority, and in this case, majority of the House, majority of the Senate, has not come up with a plan to fix our roads? It's not historically traditional that the minority comes forward with a plan, but I think the fact that we're here and we're providing the plan shows our commitment to wanting to be able to fix the roads. So I think that's an important question to start a lot of your inquiries on why, in fact, you're sitting here in the minority and why we are providing you a plan, but that, again, shows our commitment to fixing the roads. And with that, I would be interested to ask any questions that you have.
Yeah, and before we open it up to questions on the revenue side, I want to again emphasize that we believe that we need to do more to responsibly use the money we already have. And certainly, Floor Leader Singh talked about some of the existing revenue that should be dedicated to roads, but it's equally important to emphasize, and I think you see this on your fact sheets, that we've got to lower truck weights in this state. Our truck weights are unacceptably high. We need to lower those to 80,000 pounds, which is the federal limit, so that we can do more to preserve our existing roads. We need to demand longer and better warranties from road contractors so that they fix the roads right the first time. We also want to make sure that for the first 5 years of the coming years, that we give more money to cities and less money to the Michigan Department of Transportation to fix roads. Currently, MDOT gets about 39% and cities get 22%. We believe that those should be switched for the next 5 years so that cities get 39% and MDOT 22%. Finally, as was discussed last term, we believe that Detroit, Lansing, and Grand Rapids should be given more optional flexibility if they choose to dedicate more of their transportation dollars to mass transit, if that's what the elected officials in those communities want. And with that, I'll open it up to any questions that all of you have.
Tim, have you participated in any discussions with Republican leaders and the governor that have apparently taken place over the last few days?
I have had a telephone conversation with the governor over a week and a half ago, and I communicated to the governor that we stand ready to work in a bipartisan way to try to come up with a sensible road funding solution in a bipartisan way. I had a phone conversation with the speaker a week ago, which I emphasized the same. Thus far, they have not taken me up on that offer, and we'll see if they choose to do so in the coming days and weeks.
Re-regulation of electricity, would that hit schools as well, or you guys, can you talk about specifically what that element
absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely. Fully re-regulating the electricity market would require those consumers, specifically those big companies like Walmart and other big box stores, a number of big corporations, to pay more for their electricity prices. Currently, they are heavily subsidized by all the ratepayers. Now, fully re-regulating would require them to pay at least $300 million more per year. We believe that there should be some caveats and some people should be allowed to take advantage of choice, including schools and including businesses, if they can demonstrate that without choice they would have to shut down or move out of state. We also think that other ratepayers should get at least some reduction as that subsidy comes to an end. And so we're only counting on $225 million per year instead of that full $300 million per year, precisely to allow schools and some others to continue to use choice and to make sure that other utility ratepayers get some rebate.
There was the House Dem plan, and you're not sold yet.
That would be an understatement.
Would you have voted for the Senate plan this year? Would you support that?
I could have lived with the Senate plan as they sent it over, yes.
So if they sent that to you in 2014, would that have gotten through the House?
It was very similar to some things. Now, making some guarantees to the income tax rate cut, I would have continued to work with them, but again, somewhere between zero and it was not even 50-50. It was about a third existing resources, two-thirds new revenue was something I said I was willing to do in 2014 that was rejected.
So if this plan may have came a year later, this might have been the solution.
It might have been, but I think it still has great opportunity to become the building blocks for the solution here. I think the House may make some changes, but the principles are there, and I think that this can provide a very real solution that fixes the roads and that makes Michigan even better for jobs.
You think maybe just the House members need to have some time to get comfortable with it?
I think they've got to work through those things. They probably will have to make some changes of their own. And I think from the things that I'm picking up by reading MERS, those sound like they'd be very positive changes. So I think that opportunity really exists. And then the Democrats will have a choice. Are they willing to join in solving the problem, or they're going to continue to do publicity stunts because they really don't want the problem solved?
All right, very good. Jay Spolder, former Speaker of the House, now an advisor for several clients, including the West Michigan Policy Forum. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for the tour of MERS World Headquarters.
Isn't it something?
It's incredible.
It is.
And we haven't even gone up into the conference room yet. If you want to rent some space, we've got some out front, just so you know. If you're looking for a Lansing office, we've got some space. There's my plug for the day, John, just so you know I'm helping you out. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. I'm Kyle Moore. Take care.